This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And again, this is Christine James, not Kevin Tachi, but it is Monday Night Talk. And again, we have taken over this segment to finish up with our political forums. And again, Election Day is next Tuesday. And here we are ending all these political forums. This is our last one of the season, and it's the 9th Congressional District. So we're so happy that both of the candidates could be here in studio. We have the incumbent, and that's a Democrat, Bill Keating. Thanks for joining us tonight. And we have his challenger, Republican Peter Tedeschi. Thanks for joining us, too. And if you don't know, if you live in the 9th Congressional District, because I hate to say that some people really don't know which district they live in, I'll tell you. All of Barnstable County, Dukes County, and Nantucket County, of course, Cape and Islands. In Bristol County, you've got Acushnet, Dartmouth, Fairhaven, Fall River, Wards 1 to 3, Ward 6, Precincts A and B, and Ward 4, Precincts A and B, and Ward 5, New Bedford, and Westport. In Plymouth County, Carver, Duxbury, Halifax, Hanover, Hanson, Kingston, Marion, Marshfield, Mattapoisett, Middleborough, Norwell, Pembroke, Plymouth, Plimpton, Rochester, Rockland, and Wareham. And, of course, asking me questions here, we have the same crew that was just here. Nobody was able to escape. The host of Monday Night Talk, that's Kevin Tachi. Thank you, Kevin.
Yes,
I like this. What do you look like, a lounge singer here? And our own Charles Mathewson asking questions. And, again, Whitman Hanson, Community Access TV. We appreciate it. And Amy Leonard, who is doing the timing.
You know, Christine, in his spare time, he is a lounge singer.
I mean, we will do that if we have a few minutes to fill at the end. But what we're doing is the same format we use for every political forum. Opening and closing statements are prepared by the candidates, round of questions in between, and then we have our round of questions, which is the lightning round. Those are either yes or no answers or one or two sentences tops. The reporter will decide what you want to use. So we want to start with our opening statements, and the names were just chosen out of the stand-in for the official newsroom koozie, because I told you earlier that seemed to have disappeared after a previous political forum here.
Been taken hostage.
It's true. Peter Tedeschi will start, and then we'll start with Bill Keating. Then we'll go to Bill Keating, and we will reverse that order at the end. These are two-minute opening statements, and let's say good evening to Peter Tedeschi.
Good evening, Christine. Thanks. Great to be here. Congressman, great to see you. This is our fifth debate, I believe, so I want to thank the Congressman for investing the time in this very important process. My name is Peter Tedeschi. My wife, Kathy, and I are lifelong residents of the South Shore. We actually currently live in Marshfield, just a few miles from here. I'm the former president CEO of my family's business, Tedeschi Food Shops. I'm a husband, a father, and a grandfather. And for me, running for office is an opportunity for me to give back to an area that has allowed my family, starting with my immigrant grandparents at the turn of last century, to realize the American dream. During my time at Tedeschi Food Shops, I'm very proud of a lot of the things we accomplished. We were the convenience store chain of the year. But some of the things I'm most proud of are things that have less to do with business, more to do with people. Things like being the Best Buddies Employer of the Year and being the number one employer of Friendship Home members while I was president CEO of Tedeschi's. For those that don't know, both Friendship Home and Best Buddies, two great organizations that do wonderful work for those with developmental disabilities in our area. The other reason I'm running is I'm concerned with what I see going on in Capitol Hill today. We have a highly charged, partisan political environment, and you have two options when you see something like this. You can complain about it or do something about it. I've chosen to do something about it. My opponent's a 41-year career politician, most partisan member of the Massachusetts delegation. And, you know, look, I vow to reach across the aisle and across the country to get the work of the ninth done for the people here. And I'll do it in a bipartisan way. This election cannot be about politics as usual. This has to be about people. I would also look forward to working with Governor Charlie Baker, who's endorsed me and supported my candidacy, to help further the cause and the work that he's done on things like the opioid epidemic, to take that nationally, but also to be able to help make sure he's got a partner on Capitol Hill to further the work of the people here in Massachusetts. At the end of the day, I hope that this election is about people and not just about party. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement. Peter Tedeschi running for 9th Congressional District as a Republican. Now we're going to say good evening to Bill Keating. He's the incumbent. He's a Democrat here in the 9th Congressional District.
And thanks, Christine. You know, after this week, I have to share a story. My grandparents came to this country with nothing. They had eight children. One of them was a veterans agent for three decades. Another, she worked her whole life helping at a hospital school for disabled children. Some had their own businesses. Some were in law enforcement, and one lost his life, killed in action, saving the lives of two Americans. Yet when my grandparents saved for a home, the neighborhood got together. They had a meeting to try and buy them out. They wanted to do this because they came from a different country and they practiced a different religion. They weren't successful, but my grandmother also told me a story that a few years later, there was a group that wanted to buy land for a temple on the same street, and they wanted to have another meeting. Well, she stood up at town hall, at town meeting, and defended their right to get that property. She gave me a life lesson, that discrimination against one is discrimination against all. This week in Kentucky, two individuals in a grocery store were gunned down because of their race. Across the country, people became targeted with bombs because they were exercising their democratic right of free speech. And in Pittsburgh, 11 individuals exercising the peaceful right of prayer, practicing their religion, were shot to death. So many of us have our own stories, family stories, American stories. We should share those stories, and we should start a new national and civil dialogue. You know, as DA, I enforce the civil rights law, but as a congressman, I will work to unite us and never remain silent when our basic rights are being abused.
Thank you very much. That's Bill Keating, his opening statement. We're going to go to questions now. We're going to begin with the host of Monday Night Talk, Kevin Tachi.
My first question is for the congressman. Now, one of the biggest problems in Congress isn't necessarily issue-driven, but more driven by politics. It seems those elected to either the House or Senate prefer to stay loyal to their party than to vote for the needs of the American people. If you could, please share some examples with our audience of issues or legislation that you're part of a bipartisan effort and the outcome of those examples, please.
Well, I must tell you that of the entire membership of Congress, 435 members, I rank fourth in this Congress for getting my amendments passed. That is a tangible and true record of bipartisan effectiveness. These were in many areas. They were dealing with job training programs and advancement, particularly opioid treatment, fishing issues, and also on protections for disaster training and other things important to our coastal area. You know, on all those areas, I successfully passed legislation through. The opioid area in particular, where I lost a family member to an overdose and successfully have another relative a decade and a half in recovery. I worked across the aisle on making sure that we were effective with veterans, where we had mandatory education on prescription for any prescriber for a veteran, because they're twice as affected by this. I worked in areas where I dealt with Republicans on having dual guidelines so that doctors and people would know when to prescribe opioids.
Thank you very much.
I'll stop there. There's more to come.
Okay. Same question to you, Peter, but it's not necessarily what you have done. I want to know if you do head to Capitol Hill to work on issues and legislation. Are you going to be there to talk about the issues, or are you going to be more worried about party affiliation?
Sure. Well, a couple of things, Kevin. First of all, I will talk about some of the things I've done. While I was president and CEO of Tedeschi Food Shops, I routinely worked with our largest competitors, not for the betterment of Tedeschi's or for myself, but for the betterment of the entire industry. Wouldn't it be nice to have that type of collaborative effort on Capitol Hill today? The congressman does rank 364th out of 435. That's the bottom 16% in Congress on the partisan index rating by Georgetown University. And he ranks last in the Massachusetts delegation. But the other thing is, I also believe in term limits. Congressman Keating has served four terms as our congressman. He's looking to serve his fifth. I've signed a pledge to serve no more than three terms. I believe if we had term limits, Kevin, in place today, we wouldn't have a lot of the problems we have today. We have more legislators focused on doing the work of the people rather than the bidding of their party. Congressman Keating votes with his own party over 95% of the time. I'm lucky if I agree with myself 95% of the time. And I think the other thing it would do is it would mute the influence of money, which is another huge problem that we have in Congress today.
Okay. Thank you. Questions, Charles Mathewson.
Peter Tedeschi, in your campaign materials on your website, you warn that the federal deficit is too high. Mm-hmm. I'm referring to my notes here. Democrat Bill Clinton wiped out the deficit. Republican George Bush built the debt back up. Democrat Barack Obama avoided economic catastrophe. Republican Donald Trump has further increased the deficit. Why should we trust another Republican to reduce the deficit just because he says he will?
Sure. Well, I think one of the things that sort of a lot of Republicans have in common is, well, let me speak for myself. I am fiscally very conservative. I'm socially more moderate. And really what that means is, first and foremost, I believe that you will spend your money more judiciously than our government is spending your money today. So I believe there needs to be more transparency and oversight. I'm suspecting that what you're referring to, though, is the recent tax plan that went through.
That's part of it.
Okay, and to talk about that for a second, on the one hand, I believe in lower taxes. On the other hand, I believe there was a missed opportunity there. A lot of folks in our district, in our area, in Massachusetts for that matter, are double taxed because we didn't fight for them to include or to really address the issue of SALT, state and local tax deductions. And because of that, we have a lot of folks that are paying double taxes on the money that they earn. And if I was in Congress, I may have fought, may not have voted to pass that law. That being said, it's passed. I think it can be a good thing, but I think we need to wait and find out. It cannot come off the backs of the Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and we may need to change it over time.
Thank you.
Bill Keating, you've witnessed these ups and downs over the years. What needs to be done now?
Well, the deficit issue, I used to go by the offices of some people, and they have these little ticker tape things going with it. They're not there now, because what happened in the tax bill that Peter, up to this moment, had supported is this. It's going to cost $2.3 trillion to pay back. That's over one-tenth of the entire national debt with one bill that never had a hearing. And the Republicans in the Ways and Means Committee that didn't even know what was going to be in it when it came out. So that has to be paid back, because it was also against the rules. It was unfunded. So they're very clear. Paul Ryan, the Republican leadership, and the Republican leadership, Mitch McConnell, made it clear, amazingly, they're going to pay this back by cuts in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. That's just going to create another huge problem and greater deficits, because the number one issue facing us right now, I believe, is what's happening to our health care. Pre-existing conditions being cut, opioid treatment being cut, prescription costs not being guaranteed, all those guarantees gone, and now picking up the cost of this tax bill with Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security cuts.
But I want to get to what needs to be done now. Some people think the tax cut was a wonderful thing. Others think it was the worst thing that's happened in decades. But what has to happen now? Peter, you said you would not cut Medicaid, Social Security, and Medicare, but the leadership has said that's what's coming next.
So here's one of the differences between Congressman Keating and myself. I'm willing to stand up to my own party. I am a Republican, yes, that is true, but I'm willing to stand up to the party establishment to do what's right. Congressman Keating said it's just now that I'm having a change of tune relative to the tax plan. No, I've always felt this way. I've always felt that SALT should have been included in that tax plan. And I always believe, like any piece of legislation, like any good business, we can be better tomorrow than we are today. We need to be mindful of that. And if the additional job situation we're seeing, we have more people working, we have more open jobs than we have people applying for unemployment today, additional revenues coming into businesses. If those things should help to decrease that gap, that hole that we're sort of digging there, but to the extent it doesn't, we need to address it and make changes to the plan to ensure we're not adding additional debt to future generations.
So you're going to hold spending is your solution?
Well, or change the tax plan to make so there's not as much going out. Both. It's not one or the other. There's no silver bullet here. It's got to be a balanced approach. You cannot do it one way or the other. You have to look at it holistically, like you would with a business.
Okay, Bill Keating, what has to happen now?
Well, I'll tell you this: the SALT never should have been in, so that you know people here can deduct their property tax and state income tax. Now they're not going to be able to do it the way they did before. A lot of homeowners in this district, most of them, are going to end up paying more taxes for a plan that rewarded corporate interests mostly, and only 6% of employees saw any of it. Now, if you took SALT out, as Peter proposes, that's going to make the deficit greater, because that's what they did to try and offset some of the cost. Now, as far as standing up in front for your party, I don't think anyone in recent times in Massachusetts has stood up more strongly to the most powerful person in their party than I did when I took on Bill Bulger in the state Senate. I still have some scars to prove that, but I did, because I believe there had to be change, and eventually that change happened. So it's something I will do time and time again, being independent, but you have to be consistent on this. This tax bill was one of the worst things done. That's why, amazingly, it's got about a 30% favorability rate in the United States.
Well, what has to be done now?
I think we have to look at that tax bill, but healthcare is the biggest, one of the biggest, our debt and healthcare are two of our biggest drivers. So number one, you know, we have to be careful of the debt. We can't be dealing with money. We have a rule in the House that when something costs money, it has to be offset. They just tore up that rule and threw it away. First, abide by the rules. If you're going to do something, make sure it's offset with something else. That's the rules we're supposed to be operating under. And number two, we've got to do something with healthcare. And I'll tell you this, by doing away with pre-existing conditions, opioid treatment, not covering prescription drug coverages, and cutting Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, but particularly when you look at MassHealth here that's funded with Medicaid, that's going to end up costing us more money. The lowest growth in healthcare came about after the Affordable Care Act, and we were heading in the right direction. That is now being reversed, and that's going to just make our deficit one of the biggest drivers in our deficit even harder to deal with.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Do you think, and let me just continue in that same vein, do you think that single-payer health insurance is the way to go, Bill Keating?
You know, there's a lot of talk about that, but realistically where we are now, that universal health care I think everyone wants in the future sometime, but the problem is that can't deter us from doing the most we can in the present. The most we can in the present has been moving in the direction of the Affordable Care Act. And Massachusetts took those advantages, and they came up with a plan here that the rest of the country should have been moving for under the Affordable Care Act, where only 2.5% of the people did not have insurance here. But they used MassHealth and Medicaid, maximizing that strongly to be able to do that. Now, when you're cutting, as the Trump budget says, $1.5 trillion, in Medicaid, MassHealth is going to blow away. And those savings that we've had right here in this state, as well as the savings around the country, they're gone, and it's going to cost us more. So, you know, we have to look at health care in terms of reducing health cost and creating greater access.
Okay, I want to ask Peter Tedeschi, single-payer health care, the way to go or another direction?
No, I don't think it's the way to go. I don't trust the government to make all our health care decisions for us. And I think if we want to drive down the cost of health care, I think that's what we're really talking about here. There's some fundamental things we can do to get us there. First and foremost, we need transparency. Okay, you know how much it costs to get your oil in your car changed. You probably may decide on where to go based on that. Shouldn't you know how much it costs to get your hip replaced at hospital X versus hospital Y? And by the way, what the success rate is once you've had the operation done. And that's number one. Number two, we need tort reforms. When I say tort reforms, what I mean is we need to do away with frivolous lawsuits. Okay, we see the TV ads all the time. And don't get me wrong, there are some perfectly legitimate, many legitimate malpractice lawsuits and things like that. But the fact of the matter is there's also a lot of frivolous lawsuits that we, the general public, ends up paying for. And then lastly, I think we need to have the right to be able to buy our insurance across state lines. I do not know why that's a problem. We should be able to do it today. You do these things, you start to bring down health care costs.
Thank you very much. That was Peter Tedeschi. Now, questions for the candidates from Kevin Tachi.
Gun violence, again, making headlines. The latest stuff, of course, taking place this weekend in Pittsburgh at a synagogue as 11 people lost their lives, wounding several more. These incidents are becoming more and more commonplace, whether it's schools, the workplace, houses of worship. Bless you.
Thank you.
Is it time for the federal government to do like they did in 1986 with commercial driving licenses, create a uniform system that all states would use to approve new gun licenses and monitor them, and also track gun sales? Or is there much more to this problem, Peter?
So, look, I mean, there's some common sense things that that can be done, and we've seen some of them here in Massachusetts. Things like red flag law, which make a whole lot of sense when you think about it. We keep talking about the fact that a lot of the gun violence is really caused by mental illness. Most deaths by gun violence are actually by suicide. Okay, we have some mental health issues that are not being addressed. So I think it's to put a system in place where we can actually have people close to the person that has guns. Because let's be honest about this, Kevin. You, right now, you've got a 5-year Your license is good for 5 years. Your license to carry firearm, let's say, for example, is good for 5 years. A lot can change in 5 years, whether it's you have an accident, you become addicted to opiates. A lot of different things can change. We need to be realistic and mindful about that. The other thing we need to have is we need to have waiting periods. There's just no reason that someone needs to decide today they want to buy a gun and to be able to go in and just buy a gun. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm a big supporter and advocate of the Second Amendment. I'm a gun owner myself, but we need to be smart and mindful about this.
So as a gun owner, if you are subjected to, say, every 2 years, just like a commercial driving license, every 2 years you get to self-certify. Mm. What if you had to self-certify, you had to certify for mental illness? Do you think that's a good idea for gun owners?
When you say self-certify,
well, I'm just saying you go to a doctor, and you get a certification that you send in to, whether it's the state or if there's a national registry. To again, when I say that, you're going to a physician who is part of the process, who will truthfully say, okay, here's a problem.
I'm not sure. I haven't thought about it in those terms. But I do know
that. But is it time to think about that?
I think everything's on the table. But you know, look, we need to again. I want to make sure we protect our Second Amendment rights. Mm-hmm. But we need to be smart. Number one responsibility is to keep our people safe. And if you've got someone that's showing signs of mental illness, okay, whether it's they're committing crimes or doing things, and they own guns, that should be a red flag. And those are the type of things we need to do. Get the guns away from them. And deal with it from there.
Okay. Same question, Congressman, in regards to doing like the commercial driving license, where you have a uniform set of rules. If someone's going to be a gun owner, as far as a registry, as far as monitoring them, would you be in favor of something like that? Is that something was the problem far greater than that?
Well, you're going to see some pieces of legislation that would be correct for a federal approach, some that it would be correct for a state approach. You know, states differ greatly in our country, and I believe that there should be that, you know, two-tier way of viewing it. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a member of the Gun Violence Prevention Caucus, one of the original members, and it's a bipartisan caucus led by a Vietnam veteran who's a member of the NRA. But we propose many changes at the federal level that make sense. Closing the gun sale loopholes and enforcing background checks on all commercial gun sales. Monitoring and having controls over what's sold over the internet in terms of guns. Dealing with, you know, hate acts, as you mentioned before, as well as dealing with acts where there's stalking. But these are all things that can be dealt with. Now, when I was a DA, I dealt with victims of gun violence and their families, and they lost loved ones, and I sat with them, and they all asked one thing of me: please do not let this happen to anyone else again.
Just to kind of follow up on the mental illness, just like commercial driving license, you have to prove that you are healthy and fit to be able to drive a vehicle of a certain GVW, gross vehicle weight. Why not have some kind of a regular test for a gun owner that proves that they are mental, that they have the mental faculties to be able to own that weapon? Because we're hearing more and more that mental health is part of the problem with some of these instances place.
I'll tell you what I think would help a lot of states. What we have here in Massachusetts, when you're going in for license to carry, you have to go in to either the chief or his designee in every town. Some of the people that we've seen in these terrible tragedies, if they came into the police station, it would have taken about 20 seconds for them to realize this person is having some mental challenges and this could have been perverted. So what we have in Massachusetts would be great across the country. But I'll tell you this, we're never going to have action on any of these common sense gun laws as long as the current leadership is in the House. They're not reaching the floor, not even a bill to do away with people that are on the no-fly list because they're terrorist suspects. They can go and legally get gun and explosives in this country. So put these things on the floor and have a vote. And you know what you'll see? Bipartisan support for many of the things I mentioned.
But what about somebody having to go to a physician, somebody who is qualified to say, this individual should not own a gun? Should that not be that part of owning a gun? How do you feel about that?
I don't know if everyone has to go through their own doctor's check. You have doctor shopping. That level I talked about of dealing with the basics and gun safety, mm-hmm. putting these bills on the floor for a vote and finding common ground will be successful. Okay. And the states can deal with some of the others. But we can do better. We can save lives. But we'll never do it as long as the NRA has so much power over this current leadership right now in Congress, so they won't even put it on the floor for a vote. I will not support any leader that doesn't give me a commitment to put these bills on the floor for a vote. If you want to vote against it, great. That's your that you're accountable to your own district. But don't hide behind non-votes when people's districts have 80 and 90% support for some of these common sense gun laws, and the leadership to protect them or to protect this gun lobby won't even allow democracy to happen.
Okay. Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates?
Peter Tedeschi, you advocate for climate resiliency, essentially infrastructure improvements along the coast, and this is a largely coastal district. I haven't found anything about your position on greenhouse gases.
Sure. So I believe that, I believe humans have helped to cause the issue that we have today with climate change. There's science is there to prove it. And in an area where we have nearly 80% of our towns are coastal, nowhere is that more important than it is right here. Rising sea levels have had a detrimental effect. We saw the effects last winter, particularly right here in Marshfield, Brent Rock, what transpired. What's the solution? There's a few of them. Some of them are already sort of work in progress. An 800 megawatt wind farm going off the coast of Martha's Vineyard could grow to 1.6 by the time they're done with it. So it's got growth capacity. Speaking with folks from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, Mass Maritime, they're working at things like, think about this for a second, capturing tidal energy. Think about being able to capture tidal energy coming through the Cape Cod Canal, for example. A couple of great things about it. It's always happening, and it's very predictable. You know when to expect it in ways that do not adversely affect maritime trade or the species that are living there. So these are the type of things. Particularly important and acute when we have the power plant, nuclear power plant, going offline and producing nearly 40% of this area's electricity.
Bill Keating, the environment continues to degrade. What have you done about it?
Well, I've been a leader in Congress, actually dating back to the days I was in the State House, where I put the Clean Water Act in that stopped the introduction of nitrogen household products into our ponds and lakes, and I've continued that interest and getting endorsement of groups like the Sierra Club for that activity. I continue to work on something that's critical in terms of the water contamination that's a result and a byproduct of what's happening in our coasts and what's happening threatening a sole source aquifer all through Cape Cod. The TIDAL program that Peter mentioned was my grant. I got that going, and I appreciate the fact that you appreciate it, because I've been involved in so many of these things, and I'll continue to be. One of the things we're working is taking a regional approach. I've worked with Senator Jack Reed from Rhode Island, and so I've spearheaded it in Massachusetts for a Southern New England program dealing with coastal protection from this. And I also deal with terrorism on the Foreign Affairs Committee, and you'll say, how is that affected by climate change? It's one of the greatest reasons for a need for national security and terrorism and extremism and migration throughout our whole world right now.
Well, they're getting very good with wrapping that up.
I went around the whole world.
You put the fear of God
of
us.
The power of the finger.
We see you getting ready to hit the bell.
It's the power of the finger.
It's these nonverbal clues that you're giving.
It all goes back to grade school. That's why we use the colored paper, because people seem to respond to that. But
there's no rulers here.
No.
Just the friendly bell and the look.
And the ladybug.
The ladybug. You're listening to a political forum here. It's the 9th Congressional District. We've got the incumbent, Bill Keating, and his challenger, Peter Tedeschi, having some good dialogue here. We're going to go to the next question now. Social Security, something everybody thinks about, worries about if they're going to run out of money or not run out of money. Should it stay the same? Should they have private accounts? Peter Tedeschi, what needs to happen to Social Security?
Well, first of all, again, when it comes to things like Social Security, these are promises that have been made and the promises that need to be kept. And so if we need to make changes, whether it's to the tax plan, just roll out, we need to do that. These are people rely on it, they count on it as they get older. And so, but I am, we need to do something, and I am in favor of taking a look at privatizing it, but I think you're going to privatize it, you need to be smart and pragmatic about it, and you need to be smart in a way where people are able to use investment vehicles that maybe do not put their money at such risk, where you have such high volatility. Mm-hmm. Perhaps municipal government bonds, things like that. Putting in the stock market, I know some people are in favor of that. Where there could be great rewards there, I just think it's so risky. that I'm not, it's not something I'd be comfortable with, quite frankly. But we clearly need to do something. And again, if we need to make changes to our current tax code to make sure that's there for folks, that's what we need to do.
Okay, thank you. Same question, Bill Keating. What needs to happen with Social Security?
Well, I'm an original sponsor of Social Security 21, which is going to take Social Security into the next century, guaranteed. And this is the easiest problem to deal with of the major financial problems we have to deal with. Our program has been vetted. Our proposal has been vetted by actuaries in the administration, telling us that it's sound. And what it does, as any insurance would be, for the price of a cup of coffee a month, that's all, paid into that from people, it would pay for itself. We also raise the ceiling so that people like Warren Buffett aren't sitting there and they'll work for maybe a day and never have to pay into Social Security the rest of the year. So that's the way it's financed. And this would work whether it had built-in cost of livings at times. It would be safe to the next century. And we do some common sense things here. In our area, we need people for the workforce. You know, there's a artificially low $25,000 that if you hit when you're working on Social Security, you get taxed for everything. We're raising that to 50 so people can work on their own. It'll create more employees and we'll have a successful system. Ah, oh, I didn't beat the bell.
Thank you. Let's go to Kevin Tucci now. Questions?
Immigration still remains a top issue. I mean, as we speak, there are between 7,000 to 8,000 immigrants from Honduras that are making their way to the Mexican-U.S. border. Where do you stand on comprehensive reform that'll lead, that'll be a pathway to citizenship? Follow-up question, if you want to answer it, is how can that be done with the current makeup of Congress? Congressman Keating.
Again, this is an area where we have a lot of common ground, frankly. The DACA bill for those childhood arrivals, I'll tell you this, just knowing everyone in the House, if that was on the floor for vote, it would pass by about 70% favorability on that. It's being held up because of political reasons. Paul Ryan said, well, why put it on the floor if the president doesn't agree with it? Well, why have a Congress? Why are we there? We're supposed to be a check and balance on the system, and that's what's lacking right now. We should put that on the floor. You would have that passed within no time. Same with TPS, the protective status that you might have mentioned with some of the people that are there. These are people that have been here for a decade or two fleeing violence at home. That violence hasn't abated, and there's still talk about sending them back. Comprehensive immigration reform, again, there's a lot of common ground there. It passed the Senate 3 years ago by a 68% margin, bipartisanship. If that were put on the floor, we could work that out where we secure the border, have immigration reform done with, and know the rules instead of a broken system.
Same question, Peter, actually with the follow-up as well.
Okay.
Do you need me to
No, I got it. Okay. So first thing we need to do, Kevin, is secure our border. That's first and foremost. That's where it begins. And there are a number of ways we can do that, but that's number one. Number two, relative to the folks that are here illegally today, for the DACA recipients, I'm in favor of giving them a pathway to citizenship. I only have two requests. One, they pay their own way, and two, they obey our laws. For the older folks that came here, perhaps their parents or grandparents or guardians that brought them here, that came here as adults knowing they were breaking our laws coming here illegally. I'm not in favor of giving them a pathway to citizenship, but I am in favor of giving them a pathway to permanent residency. Again, two requirements, pay your own way and obey our laws. But they can be no safe harbor for those that would do us harm. Congressman Keating recently in a vote had an opportunity to vote in support of immigration and custom enforcement, the folks that are federal enforcement folks that protect our borders. He voted present. He might have voted against it. I would have disagreed, but respected that he had the fortitude to do it. He voted present. With an issue this important, a present vote just doesn't cut it. You need to let people know where you stand. We need to support our law enforcement, federal and local levels.
Okay. You want to respond to that?
Well, that was a resolution the same as someone would get for their 75th birthday. So it had no substance. It was political. But number one, we asked a simple inclusion into that from the leadership. We said, this is going to be misinterpreted. We'll be condoning the separation of children at the border. Put some language in there saying, we do not support separation of children from their families, put in cages from the border. And they refuse to do that. So I work in Homeland Security. I come from a law enforcement family. I support our Customs and Border people. I work with them in Homeland Security. But I don't want a vote that reflects that it's okay or it's all right to continue to ignore the issue of separation of children from their families.
Kevin, any questions? Follow-up? Okay. Charles Mathieson, questions for the candidates? 9th Congressional District.
Prescription drugs. We're the only country that doesn't negotiate the cost of prescription drugs. Come on. Why can't we do that? Bill Keating.
Well, I think it should be included in Medicare. You've got the amazing buying power of Medicare involved, and that's something that should be done. I think there were trade-offs made in the past, long before I got there, to try and deal with these issues, but I honestly think we can do it. Generic drugs as well. I voted to allow speeding up the FDA process in some instances that'll help. I've also very concerned about some of those drugs, the opioid drugs. I started a task force a decade and a half ago dealing with that. They were going to put generic OxyContins on the market without any protection, so it couldn't be crush-proof or melt-proof. From a Republican the other side of the aisle from Kentucky, Hal Rogers and myself personally intervened and stopped that from happening. So we have to work together, again, on these major issues, but when we're talking about the cost of health care, you have to talk about the cost of drugs, because that's one of the things that's propelling us so high.
Peter, how would you control the cost?
I agree with the Congressman in terms of the opportunity for us with the buying power that we have to negotiate. It amazes me that we haven't. We pay the highest prescription costs in the entire world. It is absolutely insane. Not only that, I think what we need to do is, I think we need to take another look, and we need to make sure that we hold prescription drug companies accountable for overprescribing. Things that have led to issues like the opioid epidemic that we see today. It happens on a routine basis, where perhaps something like ibuprofen or acetaminophen would do the job. They're being prescribed OxyContin, other things like that. That's just wrong, and that's a problem that we have. And by the way, the big argument that a lot of the pharma make is that the R&D costs are so expensive. By the way, a lot of taxpayers fund the R&D. We should be the beneficiaries of that. We need to do a much better job. I would fight for that for sure.
Follow-up?
Yeah.
You mentioned over-prescribing and big pharma. The news director here sends me to these vigils for people who have died from opiate overdoses. They're horrible. Mm-hmm. They are awful to sit through. It really, you know, changes you if you just go to one. Would you support more, I know some states are doing this, would you support the federal government intervening to get us reimbursement from the drug companies that started the problem? Peter.
I would absolutely. I lost a nephew to a heroin overdose, and I have a sister that's a recovering addict, opioid addict, following a back surgery that she had. So I've seen it firsthand. It's one of the things that you see when we talk to people throughout the district. I give the governor a lot of credit for a lot of the things he's done. One of the things he really did that was very important was he got people comfortable. He destigmatized it in a way that got people to finally come out of the shadows to get the help that they need and deserve. So yes, I would help go after Big Pharma to get reimbursement for folks that have been harmed by it, number one. Number two, though, we need to do more than that. We need to get more beds, make more beds available so people can have longer stays in recovery and make sure they're getting the follow-up help they need after they're out of recovery. Otherwise, it's going to be a revolving door, and that's not doing it. The human cost here is way too high, and if that isn't enough for people to do something about it, it's costing our systems, costing money at the same time. We should do it because it's the right thing to do, though, and I would fight for that.
Bill, would you charge Big Pharma for the problem they've caused?
I think that that's happening right now, but we don't hear about it because of suits. The suits are settled and they never become public, so that's happening. They should pay their price. They made their money over such a long period of time. You're talking about the vigils and sitting with family members. I told you before, I was had a family member lost his life as well. But I also worked, and a person that you see on television, actually, in Governor Baker's commercials, Joanne Peterson, who I worked with recently, wrote me and just said, for as long as I can remember dating back over 15 years, Bill Keating's been at the front lines fighting opioid epidemic. Now, her group is Learn to Cope. So people listening, Learn number two, Cope. If it's a family member, it's a great resource for people. And she said, if it hadn't been for his work organizing, Learn to Cope may never have come to be. So I've worked with the families like this for years. It's to see them, the courage that they go through this with to survive, and the courage they go through to make sure it doesn't happen to anyone else is an inspiration to me.
Yeah, just an editorial note. Two of the great successes in this have been the Plymouth County Drug Force and Learn to Cope. They are unbelievably good.
Okay, any follow-ups for that?
No, that was my follow-up. Okay. I followed up myself.
Editorial.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to talk just a little bit about commercial fishing. And if I'm mispronouncing this, tell me. Magnuson-Stevens fishing bill. What is it? Do you or did you support it, Bill Keating?
I've supported it in the past. This issue that tries to balance the sustainable fishing so that there's fishing products in the future, that's the self-interest that, for the fishermen involved. Is there. This latest one, frankly, I did not support because, again, it fell victim to a terrible system of a lack of transparency in Congress. The bill that was being discussed and moving forward in committee was there, was ready to support it, and all of a sudden, there was a complete rewrite from page one on, changing virtually every aspect of it with no one knowing about it. And there was about 3 days' notice, and I worked with the fishing industry, the people I work with day-to-day in our district, just to find out what had happened. And one of the things that happened in that was the quota was being shifted. So those commercial fishermen you're talking about, Christine, they were going to lose quota. They were going to lose the numbers of fish they could catch in that bill that no one knew because it wasn't in print before. So I didn't support it then, but I did two amendments that helped it with electronic monitoring and saving them money and stopping, you know, fraud in the future, and was able to move forward with it. But the bill.
Thank you. Peter Tedeschi, are you familiar with this
Absolutely.
Fishing Act? Do you support it or not
so
support it?
So Magnuson-Stevens, basically what it does is it allows to set quotas relative to species and how much they're allowed to catch on a regular basis. I've met with fishermen. I've talked to fishermen. Congressman Keating, we were just down in New Bedford, said that he didn't support it because it was it benefited recreational fishers over commercial fishermen. Myself and my team have gone through the bill again. That's just not the case. This is beneficial to the fishermen. We reached out to fishermen again in New Bedford and heard confirmatory from them, they would have supported the bill the way it was because it was in their best interest. Just to the north of us, Steve Lynch in the 8th Congressional District, who has a lot of fishermen out of Cohasset and Scituate, he voted in support of it. He was the only one of the Massachusetts delegation to support it. I absolutely would have supported it because it supported our fishermen. They're on the ropes as it is, and it's not just our fishermen. It's the folks that make the nets, to sell the fuel, to process the fish. And at the end of the day, we're talking about people trying to put food on their families' tables. You bet I would have supported it because I support our local fishermen.
Okay, quick rebuttal.
Well, that's not what the fishermen and we talk with all the time said. There's one scallop interest that was in support because they got what they want. Every other industry was not in support of this. They did it. I think our staff, all no offense to Peter, our staff and lawyers that deal with this every day, did a good job researching it, and so did their own. And that's who I deal with every day, the fishing industry. No one has more, not Representative Lynch, not anyone has more fishing interest than I do in the state. And as a matter of fact, one of the reasons so many of the other delegation members do it is they usually follow our lead.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's go back now to Kevin Tachi. Questions for the candidates?
Massachusetts is yet another state to approve the use of medical and recreational marijuana. Where do you stand on marijuana as an industry, and would you support legislation that would decriminalize it on a federal level? Peter.
So when we decriminalized marijuana, look, I'm in favor of medicinal marijuana. Anything that helps ease the suffering of folks, I am all for that. There's different properties in marijuana that can be extracted, that can give people, they have great anti-inflammatory properties and other things like that that help can ease people's pain, whether it's with arthritis and other things. I'm in favor of those types of uses of marijuana. I'm very concerned that we passed legislation that legalized recreational marijuana without fully understanding the consequences of doing so by seeing how it played out in other states. So I'm not a big fan. Again, for medicinal purposes, where it's going to help ease someone's pain and suffering, I'm okay with it. But I'm not a big fan, and I would not, right now as it stands today, not support legalizing it on a federal level.
Congressman, same question.
Yeah, I don't support legalizing it. States will decide. They are deciding. I would rather have, frankly, Massachusetts wait to see some of the results from other states, Colorado and other states, to see before we rushed into it. There's a lot of concern that I have in this. In Colorado, the motor vehicle homicide rate skyrocketed right afterwards. And also, this study's being done right now for the Center for Disease Control, where the age group 13 to 25 in particular, was seeing their learning abilities compromised. Their IQ tests were coming back 10 points lower while the brain is still developing. So we have to do work, particularly with those younger people with a developing brain, you know, and the rest is sort of taking its own course, frankly. People are, and the influence that people have are dictating moving forward in one direction, and you have to understand that and accept it. But by the same token, the red flags I just mentioned are really should be watched carefully.
Okay. Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates?
Peter Tedeschi, Bill Keating has been a congressman for some time. He's been reelected several times. He's had some tough competition. What do you dislike most about him? His choice of color for a sweater tonight, for instance?
Red.
He looks red.
Red, yeah, yeah.
You know,
I'm being bipartisan.
Yeah. Which is also the color of the card that tells you to stop speaking. But
reclaiming your time, okay.
Yeah. What do you dislike?
So, first of all, there's nothing I personally dislike about Congressman Keating.
He's a nice guy.
He's, you know something, I have to tell you. So we've got to know each other. This is our fifth debate. Been very cordial. We're different. We have different positions, but we've developed a mutual respect. And, you know, if we respect each other, we respect you, because we want you to hear our points and why we're different. So there's a few things. The main differences between us is he is a career politician. He's been doing this for 41 years. And trust me, I tell you, after running for Congress my first time, it's not for the faint of heart. So I do respect that, and that is not easy. But, you know, I view this as a public service, not a career. And that's probably the fundamental difference between us. And that, and the fact that I am, in that regard, I'm willing to stand up to my party, and I'm not in this. And if doing the right thing means that I'm not reelected, I'm perfectly fine with that. Because at the end of the day, I'm going to be able to look my wife, my kids, and my grandkids in the eyes and know that I did the right thing. And if that means I get elected once and not reelected again, I am perfectly fine. This is a public service, not a career.
So, Bill, are you a career politician, and does it matter?
Well, number one, I've had different roles and different hats. I've been a congressman only 7 years and maybe 10 months, not even 10 months right now, a distinction worth making. I'd been a state house member of the representatives. If I wasn't there, one of the early bills I passed, putting smoke detectors in that saved lives in people's homes, may not have been law. That clean water bill I talked about may not have been law. I was a state senator, and the cut that we had at the time on the estate tax that I authored may not have happened when it did. I was a DA for 12 years, I think brought together great progress with drug courts, with a mental health diversion, with helping juveniles stay out of trouble, and still prosecute the first murder case without a body. So I had that executive function running the biggest law firm in the county, and I stood up to my party in the Senate, taking on Bill Bulger. I'm ranked fourth in this Congress out of 435 members, both parties, in getting their amendments passed. That means you're working in a bipartisan basis.
Any follow-up questions?
No.
What do you think the biggest issue is in this race, and do you think that one particular issue is going to propel either candidate in either direction? What do you think, Bill Keating? What's the biggest issue in this race that people talk to you about when you're out campaigning?
Well, quickly, I'll tell you what's a non-issue in this race that's great. The fact that we're getting along well and we have civil discourse. It's been a very civil campaign, and people appreciate it. And it is a big issue right now, by the way. I think health care is the biggest issue, and although I try and deal with it from the perspective of how it affects our economy, how it affects people in their lives, how people get a fighting chance by having health care, it's being taken away from us right now. It's the biggest difference in this race. I'm standing up and working with my party, demanding action take. I want pre-existing conditions to continue. I want opioid treatment to continue. I want prescription drug. Peter said allows state-to-state competition. Well, Texas is has already pulled out of the Affordable Care Act, and Trump's Justice Department is on their side to take away the Affordable Care Act. So there's a difference in the campaign. You can't be for state by state when one of them wants to pull out and our federal government's allowing them to do it.
Okay, Peter Tedeschi, what do you think the biggest issue is? Do you think it's health care in this race?
So I think, from a larger perspective, the thing we keep hearing from folks, we talk about, is they're tired of the partisan bickering in Capitol Hill. Too many people sort of going to their corners, not getting the work of the people done. So that issue right there affects so many other things. Things like immigration. We need to get our arms around this fight. We've been kicking this can down the road for so long. It's ridiculous. It's not good for anyone. And by the way, when we talk about immigration, we're talking about things like making sure that we are smart about the H-2B visa process that hurts a lot of businesses locally down the Cape, where we have a $1 billion a year tourism industry. Opioids. Fighting opioids is another one that we hear a lot about. A lot I want to do to try to help out there, following Governor Baker's lead. And then lastly, you know, healthcare is obviously a very important thing. We've made promises to people. We need to make sure we do what's necessary to keep those promises.
Okay. I want to go right now to the lightning round. And these are questions where we ask the candidates. And it's either questions, and it's either yes or no. Yes or no without an explanation. Or one or two sentences tops. And we try to be tough about this. So, Kevin Tocci, lightning round question.
One word that describes your opponent.
Who do you want to start with?
Peter.
Two words. Career politician. I already broke the rule. Sorry.
Okay. Congressman?
Well, nice one guy. Word. A nice guy.
Okay. Charlie?
It's a big, beautiful district from South Coast, Cape, South Shore. What are two or three of your favorite spots? Peter.
Oh, my word. Growing up on the South Shore my whole life, I absolutely love it. It's beautiful.
Two or three spots.
Oh, two, three spots.
Lightning.
Okay, I'm going to say Nantucket is spectacular. I got to tell you, New Bedford, another one of my favorite areas. And I have an affinity because I grew up on Green Harbor. Harbor area is great.
Okay.
Okay, Bill.
My house.
Yeah, right on the canal.
Westerly sunset. And most importantly, I'm home.
Okay. All right, the mayor in Fall River, and if I mispronounce his name, I apologize, Jaciel Correa. Mm-hmm. Is it time for him to go? Bill Keating, two sentences.
I think that given what he's facing, it's in the best interest of the city that he resign.
Okay. Do you agree with that, Peter Tedeschi?
I agree. He's self-serving what he's doing now. It's hurting the people.
Okay. Let's go, Kevin Tocci.
Name one top issue Congress needs to tackle in the new legislative session. Peter.
Immigration.
Congressman.
Healthcare.
It's a coastal district. Whole clams or strips? Bill.
Whole clams.
Peter.
I'm kind of a strip fan from way back in the Howard Johnson's day where there was one up the street in Situate. Yeah, that's where I'm.
Put him in the clamp.
I know
that's
not healthy,
okay.
But it is, I know. Sorry.
All right, one more quick question. One more lightning round
one
question.
One word that describes you, Congressman.
I think.
One word. No
serious.
Peter.
Integrity.
Okay. Let's go to closing statements now. The candidates, these are 1 minute long. We're going to reverse the order that we had. So we're going to start with Bill Keating and then go to Peter Tedeschi.
I was reminded of a young man that came into my office and said that he didn't have health care insurance and he was under 26, so his parents put him in. He just went for his wellness check, found out he had testicular cancer, and it was serious, but he was treated because of that. He told me he was cancer-free. It was a great story about the Affordable Care Act. But guess what? They're trying to make it sure now that even though he's sure and he's clear and he's cancer-free, he has one other problem, pre-existing conditions going forward. We have to make sure that we deal with these issues. I've enjoyed this campaign. It's our fifth debate. We've been very civil. I think we set a good mark for the way campaigns should be done. But I'll do two things. I'll seek common ground as ranking fourth of 435 members when it's there, but I'll also never remain silent when our basic core rights are being taken advantage of. We need a check and balance right now in government, and we need a Democratic majority to provide that in the House.
Thank you very much. That was Bill Keating. He's a Democrat and the incumbent in the 9th Congressional District. Let's go to Peter Tedeschi now.
So I want to thank Congressman Keating. This has been very civil. It's been productive. I think it's allowed people to sort of hear where we stand on things. There's certainly some areas where we agree and others where we disagree. At the end of the day, look, I don't want this to be about party as it's always been. This really needs to be about getting the work of the people done. And that means electing someone like myself that's willing to reach across the aisle and reach across the country to get the work of the people of this district done. There's a lot of work to be done, and I would be honored to do it again. I view this as a civic service, public service, and not as a career, and I'd be honored to have that opportunity and would appreciate your vote on November 6th.
Thank you very much. That was Peter Tedeschi, the Democrat in this race for the 9th Congressional District. Just to remind you,
wait a second, Christine, the Republican.
I'm sorry, the Republican. I'm sorry.
See, boy, there goes the election. I'm going to be in such trouble now.
You're listening to 95.9 FM Marshfield, the South Shore's news and information station. This whole forum will be up on our website. You hear selected cuts 2 days from now. Tomorrow we're going to have the DA's race on. But remember, I tell people, if you don't vote, you don't have a voice, get out there and vote on November 6th. We will have reporters with both of these candidates on election night. Thank you so much for listening right here on 95.9 WATD.